Welcome to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Journey with us as we discuss the life of a gentleman and how we can gain more respect and confidence with lessons in life, etiquette, and personal style. Each week, we will bring engaging discussions, thought-provoking interviews, and tips on upgrading your personal style. We are all a work in progress. Let's take this journey together. Let's live the life of a gentleman. Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. We want to thank you for listening and taking the time out of your schedule to take in this information. Please, could you do us a favor? Could you rate, review, and subscribe to the Life of a Gentleman podcast? By doing that, it's really going to help us to get this information out to other people just like yourself who want to learn more about fashion, lifestyle, business, etiquette, and things of this nature. I'm your host, Richard Taylor, and once again, I am joined by a fill-in co-host for this week, Dennis Stiles. You're already familiar with him from The Gentleman's Look, but Dennis is filling in while Charles is taking care of some necessary business. And Dennis, how's it going today?
Oh man, it's going great. I'm excited. November is upon us, and it's first day of NBA season. Can't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't get any better than the Warriors versus the Spurs. So, like I was saying, I have my popcorn ready later on.
Hey, man, don't skip that Cavs-Knicks game, man.
Oh, yeah, I got to see what the Knicks are going to do. But I won't be honest with you. I'm an NBA junkie, so we could go on and on about this. But real quick, the Knicks, I don't think this little super team they're trying to put together, I'm not a believer. So if any Knicks fans are out there, go ahead and send me your emails. But I don't think you got anything on my Pistons this year.
No, I look at the Pistons as maybe a 6th to 5th seed if everything breaks right. The Knicks, I think everybody's blowing up the acquisitions of D. Rose and Noah. Both players are over the hill and injury prone. Prosinski, he's the only player that I consider somewhat not in his prime yet. I think Melo's on his way down. So I expect the Knicks to win maybe 43 games.
Yeah, that's about the max. I wouldn't take the over on that. The thing of what you said about Melo, too, the door is just about shut unless he finds a way to hook up with his buddy LeBron out there in Cleveland.
Hey, listen, look out for that. I think that could be a mid-season trade.
Yes.
That the Cavs will try to pull to balance out the Warriors.
Oh, yeah. No, the love for Melo, that's not dead. There's still some rumblings of that, and I look forward to see how that rolls out. I'm thinking around the All-Star game, you're going to see a couple big trades happen in the league, and that might be one of them.
I'm a Brooklyn fan, so I will keep shot.
My condolences.
You know what? Jeremy Lin looks good, and let's see, maybe we could win 25 games.
There you go. If you're doing that, you're doing something good. So, well, we could talk about this forever, but what was the subject that you had in mind for today's podcast?
Very important subject for all guys, man. Let's discuss hair loss and what we can do to prevent it. And I have a solution, my friend, a product that I'm working with, and I've been using it, and it's very effective. So how do you feel about hair loss when you reach a certain age in your life? How it affects you mentally and physically?
Well, when you talk about hair loss, it's something that I can understand. A lot of times hair loss can be hereditary, but that doesn't mean that as a guy, if you're facing hair loss, it doesn't mean you're just out of the game and you're not going to look desirable. So I think we've got some solutions for people. I've got a couple tips, and I know you've got some tips and a product that you want to mention. Let me dive into my tip first, because when people think hair loss, all of a sudden, you know, what pops into your head a lot of times is, for me, is a Seinfeld. You know, you think about George on Seinfeld he always had a problem with that hair loss, and it made him such a nervous guy, and he really had no confidence. And when you're being a gentleman, you can't walk out of the house and not have confidence. So if you're having hair loss issues, that doesn't mean you can't be a confident guy. But what you want to do, number one tip, stop trying to hide it. Stop trying to cover it up. I think it's best to just embrace it, roll with it, go with it, and get yourself a nice low haircut that's going to work for you. And you don't necessarily have to just go bald, but you can have a nice low haircut that's still going to look classy, and you still can be attractive.
I agree. You could wear a Caesar fade. The only thing is you have to maintain it. I think the problem with guys is they just don't want to let go of it, whatever hair they have left. And I always say, if you're losing your hair, you must start doing something about it immediately. Don't wait till you're already, it's too late for anything to happen. Hair loss is reversible, my friends. It doesn't mean that if you're losing your hair, it doesn't mean, well, I'm stuck with this. If you take the right, nutrition and vitamins, it helps, man. Some people have seen signs. Either that or you're just going to have to wear the stuff they sell, the carpet, the powder, anything just put on top of your head does not look good, man.
No.
I'd rather you just go natural.
Yeah, me too. I've seen a lot of guys try to pull off that spray look. I mean, you can see that coming from a mile away. So newsflash to anybody who's using the spray, you're not fooling anyone. It's best to just, like Dennis said, try some natural remedies, try some nutrition. And you're right, though, Dennis. You know, you can notice when your hair starts to thin first. It's not like you wake up and you're bald one day. So when you see the warning signs, then you need to do something about it.
Yeah, I agree, man. And you know what's a guy's biggest fears, man, is when they start losing their hair, they start feeling less attractive to others. They start being less social. It affects their presentation. It affects them as far as dating. That's probably the number one thing. Because, most women would be like, oh, no, this guy looks way older than what he's telling me he is. And, guys get affected by that, Rich. So we gotta make sure that we have... give these guys the right set of tools to combat this situation as far as hair loss.
No, you're right. And, what's funny to me is the low hairstyle is kind of a new thing. When you look back at television shows from the 80s or movies from the 80s, we notice that this hair loss thing, it's nothing new. It's been going on. But what happened back then is everybody tried to hold on to the hair around the side of their heads. So they kind of had that George Jefferson or that Bozo the Clown look, with hair on the sides and the back and nothing on top. And that's really what makes you look old. When you try to hold on to that, it just, you age yourself about 20 years. You take off the sides and get real low with it, you look young again.
Yeah, but a lot of guys are going to complain though, Rich. They're going to say, not everybody's going to look as good as you or Michael Jordan, Rich. With the bald cut, that's not for everybody.
Yeah, I've embraced the bald cut,
Yeah, it works for you.
Yeah, it works, and it keeps me looking young, I want to add,
Yeah, it does. Now, let me ask you a question. How often do you use a razor or like those sharp cut little knives that guys use just shave off easily?
Well, what I do is every once in a while I will use a razor, and I've gotten really good at shaving my head in the shower. Seems to be the best for lubrication and opening up my pores. And that helps you avoid any bumps or anything like that. So you want to have a nice smooth shave. But what I find is if I do that too often, my skin still will get irritated. So I opt to use clippers a lot of times and just use them on the lowest setting. And here's the problem with that. You mentioned it. It comes out looking great. Don't get me wrong. But you have to do it more often. And like you said, sometimes guys are lazy. They don't want to have that low Caesar cut. Somebody like a Kobe Bryant, if you look at him, he's pretty much bald, but he's got everybody fooled because he has it so low and he's got that low Caesar fade. So like you said, you have to go to the barber all the time or be on top of it yourself with a nice pair of clippers, making that investment. So if you want to look good, it's going to take a little time and you can't be cheap. Simple as that.
Yeah, you got to maintain your hair, which that means you probably have to go to the barber every 7 to 10 days. And most guys, I enjoy going to the barber, but not everybody has time for that, Rich. You got to make appointments. I mean,
yeah,
sometimes people bring their kids to the barbershop, man.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do, you know.
As a matter of fact, they should do it as a family. If you do have kids, especially boys, bam, right there. You just do it all at once.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. That's the best way to get it taken care of. Hey, I've got another tip for you. I want to get your thoughts on this. A lot of guys, they start balding, and you know what they do? They start to cover it up with a hat. You ever see that? There's some people, and some of them are public figures, and you never see them without a hat. So it's like you don't even really know what they look like because they've always got a different hat, a baseball cap or a Kango hat, some kind of driver's cap, you know, a derby, yeah. Whatever. But you just never can see. So when they do take that hat off or you finally see them without that hat, it's like your mind's blown, man. You're like, who is that, you know?
Yeah. For example, LL Cool J, I didn't even know he was bald, man. Way past his career, man. I thought he just liked hats.
Exactly. See, people are trying to hide it. I don't really think that's the best way to handle the situation because you can't wear a hat everywhere. It's just not appropriate. It's not practical.
This is where fashion comes in, Rich. I think if you take care of what you have, as far as just keeping it light and trim, and you dress nice, and your presentation is not messy, it's not old-fashioned, it's modern, I think that combats whatever insecurities you might have. There's a lot of confident dudes out there that are losing their hair, but their style is on point. And people are not talking about, oh my God, this guy's losing his hair. They talk about, man, this guy's sharp.
When you have yourself put together, nobody's just focusing on your hair. In fact, most people are going to think that your hairstyle is a choice. Nobody's ever made mention to me about, oh, you're balding. There's so many people that have a low hairstyle or that are bald. It's just a choice. It's a fashion statement almost. So the problem is guys are trying to hide it and do all these weird things. Just embrace it and go with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I don't know if you have any more tips left because I have this great product that I want to talk about and feature on this week's podcast.
Yeah, let me hear about it. What is it called?
It's called Nutrafol pills, vitamins, in a sense. And it's a product that I've been using. Now, like I told people, you don't necessarily have to be bald to start using hair products as far as like to help you, you know, keep your hair thick and, you know, healthy. So this product targets multiple roots which cause hair thinning and hair loss. You want to hear this, Rich? This is going to be interesting, man.
Yeah, let's hear about it.
All right, man. Many factors such as age, stress, that's what causes hair loss. People don't understand that. Is stress, age, diet too, what you eat. It's all hormonal. That imbalances are scientifically proven to be the root of all hair losses. Now, the best part about this product, Nutrafol, is it works on healing the follicles by supporting healthy immune that circulates around the structural environment that allows the follicles to heal, then leading to great hair growth. That's why, like I tell everybody, hair loss is reversible. And I think this product, Nutrafol, I think is perfect, man, to use. It's not expensive, and it's, I mean, you've seen this. I put it this way, Rich. I've seen in NBC, Men's Fitness has been featured, and the HuffPost Live. They featured this product. So this has been endorsed by, you know, great channels.
Yeah, so this isn't something you're cooking up in your kitchen, is it, Dennis?
Nah, man, this is not gonna, you know, leave you sick or something, man. This has been endorsed by top-notch channels.
All right, so that's definitely an option for everybody listening that wants to get a jump on preventing hair loss or if you're right in the middle of it. But Dennis, let's get one final tip on if you're in the middle of hair loss right now and you don't have that product in your hands, what can you do to still step out and be confident if you're fighting the hair loss challenge right now?
Find a good barber and stick to a low cut, as low as possible. I don't know, it could be a one on the side, two on the top, a half of one all around. It's very important, you know, because that's where a messy haircut begins. So make sure you just visit the barber often and don't focus so much on what you don't have, but work around it and better all the other aspects of your life. Eat healthier, you know, work out, less stress, man. Less stress in life is very important.
Yeah, those are some great tips. And my final tip would be stay confident, because if you're making it a big deal, then more than likely other people will start to make it a big deal because you're drawing attention to it. Like Dennis said, if you have a low style and you're still dressing impeccably, people are going to be drawn to you and your personality is still going to shine through no matter if your hair is long or if your hair is short. So Dennis, I really enjoyed this discussion. That was a good topic you came up with. But at this time, I think it's about that time that we get into the interview segment for this week's. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
All right, let's do it.
And now it's time for this week's segment of the Gentleman's News. Exclusive interviews with exceptional people discussing all things gentleman, from business to fashion to lifestyle, industry leaders, authors, and more. This is the Gentleman's News.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. And we have another edition of the segment we call the Gentleman's News. And today we have a very special guest that's joining us on the line. This is Tanya Rapley. She is CEO of MyFab Finance. And after you hear this interview, you'll definitely want to visit her website and find out more. Now, Tanya has been featured on ABC, Forbes, Essence, Black Enterprise, U.S. News, and more. She is also a certified financial education instructor, so she definitely knows what she's talking about. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Hello, Richard. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we are so glad we were able to connect with you, and thank you for joining us.
I'm excited. Life of a gentlewoman or a gentle person.
That is totally right. It definitely overlaps. Especially when you're talking about finances, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Finances are one of those things. Male, woman, numbers don't lie. Numbers are the same. We treat them differently, but, I mean, numbers are numbers.
Yes, definitely. Now, let me ask you, just starting out, how did you get involved or interested in finance? When did that take place? Were you young? Has this always been something you're interested in?
You know, funny enough, I was talking to my husband yesterday. We were having dinner, and I was telling him, I was like, you know, growing up as a kid, I never wanted to be a doctor. I never wanted to be a lawyer. I never wanted to be a police officer or a firefighter or an astronaut. I didn't know what I wanted to be as a kid. All I knew is that I wanted to change the world, and I wanted to leave the world in a better place than it was when I arrived. And so I set out to get it. I have an undergraduate degree in public administration. My goal with that actually was to become a foreign services officer. But after I ended up leaving Miami where I did my schooling at, things kind of changed for me. And I ended up moving to New York City and working at a nonprofit where I was working with low-income women. And during that time, during that transition from undergraduate to New York City, a lot had happened in my life. And my finances have been neglected as a result of it. And so in working with these low-income women, years later, after I was doing all this damage to my finances, I realized that life is going to happen whether you plan for it or not. And I would rather be on that planning side. Up until that point, I was kind of one of those people, YOLO, you know, things happen.
I'm right.
Like, what happens if I live to be 65, 70 years old and I have no plan? And I was seeing that play out in the lives of the women I was working with. I mean, some of them were begging on the side. You know, they had a place to live, but they didn't have enough money for food or medicine, and they were begging at the local train station for food or medicine. That didn't make up everybody who was in the building that I worked in. But, you know, there were definitely people who had planned properly, and these were the women who were going on trips to China and cruises and living their lives in their 60s and 70s. I was like, okay, I want to be that 60, 70-year-old woman who is living her life to the fullest. And so I started with my own journey to repair my finances. I sucked at math growing up, so I used that as a reason for me not to do well or perform well in math as an adult and not to do well with my finances. But I learned so much when I started my journey, and my first milestone was improving my credit score by 130 points in 18 months.
Wow, that's
and
a big jump.
And once I did that, I was hooked. I was like, oh my God, I did it. I didn't think I could do it. You guys could do it too. I'm going to help you figure out how to do this. And so I created my platform, MyFab Finance, because I felt like there weren't enough women of color or people of color who were millennials, who were young, who were interesting, who were creative, who we didn't spend excessively, but we still like nice things. And I wanted to create a platform that's focused on financial education for that particular group. And so that is what MyStat Finance is. It is a platform dedicated to the person who wants to be financially responsible and fabulous. And it's been 3 years and it's been amazing.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. That's what really drew me to your website was the fact that you are changing lives. And it seems like you had some eye-opening experiences along the way that kind of fueled your passion to get into this. Now, you've seen a lot then. Now, what would be some of the common mistakes that you see over and over again?
Common mistakes I see not checking your bank account balance or not checking in on your finances as a whole. So not checking in your bank account balance on a regular basis, not checking your credit score. There are still some people who I talk to, and as many free resources as there are out there, they still don't know their credit score. And some of that is out of fear, I understand, but not checking isn't going to change anything. It's going to keep you ignorant. And then also just not taking an overall picture of your finances and then comparing that with your long-term goals, or even your short-term goals, and tweaking your current habits and your current trajectory so that you are able to meet your financial goals and life goals.
People sometimes fail to plan for the future. It seems like we live in the now, and a lot of people get caught up with that. How do you change your mindset to think about looking down the road, as it were?
Yeah, looking down the road, one of the things is, and I've done a lot of research on this, a lot of people tend to have a disconnect between their current self and their future self. They don't look at it as, that is going to be me. They just look at it like, oh, that's a person I haven't met yet. And when you start to realize that it is your current self responsibility to take care of your future self, I think that is where you start to pivot your mindset and start to focus more so on planning for the future. When you realize that you're all you have, essentially, no one's really going to come in and save you. Yes, a relative might pass and leave you some money, or you might meet someone who is wealthy, or you might sell that amazing idea. But what happens if that doesn't happen? Then what are you going to do? And winging it is not a proper financial planning strategy. It's not a proper life strategy as a whole. So once you begin to identify that person in the future as yourself, things begin to change. And then once you begin to create goals, not enough people have financial goals. And that's one of the things I realized. Well, they have these really vague goals. You know, they say, oh, I want to pay off all my debt. But what does that look like on a quarterly basis? What does that look like for this month? How much are you allocating monthly towards your debt? Are you pledging to commit any checks that you receive outside of your 9-to-5 to paying off your debt? Are you getting a part-time job so you can just allocate that money to debt repayment? What does that look like? Or if you want to buy a home, how are you saving for your down payment? What is your down payment savings plan? So, you know, all of us have goals. I don't think there's anyone that doesn't have goals, but not enough people think about their goals as things that they need to be very intentional and clear about. And when you become intentional and clear about your goals, it's easier to think about your goal as something that you're losing out on if you decide to spend the money on something else today.
Oh, that was perfect advice. And I love the questions that you asked. All of us can reflect on those and really look at ourselves in the mirror and see how to answer those individually. Now, I talk to a lot of people, and from time to time, people tell me that they don't have enough income. But I just want to ask you, because you're the expert, what is it that really hurts people's finances? Is it the amount of debt they have, or is it tend to be the lack of income, or is there a balance there?
I think there's a balance there, and it varies by person, because there are genuinely some people who are not making enough to cover their basic responsibilities. That happens. You know, some people have children, you know, childcare essentially is a mortgage in itself.
True.
And there are people who genuinely aren't making enough to get ahead, but there are people who are making enough and they're squandering away their money on little stuff. And people negate how expensive little stuff can be. And so, you know, that means going into Target, and you went into Target for a toothpaste and air freshener, and you walk out with a table and lawn equipment. You know, like,
right.
It's going, those little things add up, and that's money that you could have put into a savings account. And this is where a lot of people get caught up. It's that an emergency happens, and they don't have enough money in their savings account to cover that emergency. So then they get into the habit of robbing Peter to pay Paul. You're never quite even because you're starting each month out in a deficit, but then you're also at this mindset with like, but I worked so hard, I deserve nice things. But you're still not crawling out of that hole, because whenever you do get extra money, you're spending it on those quote-unquote nice things instead of putting it aside in your savings account and preparing for the next emergency. So that's kind of how the negative cycle begins to happen, is just that we don't have enough money in savings and we're spending money on little things. And then when emergency happens, we're in a hole and we're in a bind.
Yeah, I can see that, how that can happen. And it seems like it's a common trap for everybody, because most of us are impulse buyers. Like you said, you go into the store for one little thing and you walk out with the grocery basket just totally overflowing. So I've been there as well. But
and I've been there, you know, I've been there, but it's one of those things where I've built my savings up to where it's like, now I can afford to do it. But there are too many people who are doing it and can't necessarily afford to do it,
yeah,
or doing it at the expense of their short-term financial goals.
That's...
One of my really good friends says, like, if you don't go into the store to buy it, then don't buy it. Like, if that's
okay,
not what you left your house for, then don't buy it.
Oh, that makes sense. That's a good one. Now, I like what you said just a moment ago, that you've kind of planned your life and built it up in a way that you can't afford to buy yourself some of those nice things from time to time. Now, that's a position that most people want to get to. Now, what do you say to somebody who's just starting? How do they start saving or start investing so they can put themselves in that good position?
I would say find ways to, if you can cut back on your overhead, there are expenses that people have. For example, I was working with a client and I asked them how much they were spending on their cable, and it was something ridiculous, like $280 a month on cable. And I was like, what's the return on investment on that? Because they had several boxes, like everyone in the house had their own box and everything. And I was like, what is the return on investment with your cable box? And it was absolutely nothing. So if there are things that aren't, you know, that aren't costing you money and you aren't really seeing a return for in your life, find ways to cut or reduce or eliminate those costs. But if you have cut back everything you can, then the next thing you need to do is find ways to bring in extra income, because the only way to deal with a deficit is to bring in a surplus. And so that means that you need to start finding ways to make additional income, monetizing a side talent you might have, even if you're driving Uber on the weekend. There are so many people who I get into their car and they're just driving people on the weekend to make extra money. And they can make, you know, anywhere from up to $400, $500, depending on the area that you're driving in. You know, that's a decent amount of money that you can allocate towards building your savings,
sure,
or paying down debt. But either cut back on your expenses and reallocate that money, or find a way to bring in additional money and allocate that towards your new financial goals.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I have a friend actually that does that. He drives Uber on the weekend. I believe he has a goal that he's working towards, so I'm familiar with that concept. I was on your website. It seems like you promote entrepreneurship, because you had a course, I believe it was, that was called Financially Preparing to Be Your Own Boss. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Could you tell us about that?
Yeah. I mean, so yes, I do promote entrepreneurship. I grew up both of my parents were career military, so my parents, I mean, they've worked things since retirement. They worked jobs since retirement, but it's really out of desire because they're both fully retired and get their retirement. And so entrepreneurship wasn't necessarily touted in our house, because my parents were like, hey, we worked until we were 39, we retired, like, you know, it's a stable life. You got to give up 20 years of your life, things you don't want to do, to live the rest of it in the way you want. And I was like, no, forget that. That is not my plan. I'm not going to wait until I'm 40 to enjoy my life and be free. And so I was working my 9-to-5 and I really enjoyed it. But then I started making money with my Fab Finance. I started attending conferences about finance and other bloggers. And my turning point was when I was listening to a mommy blogger on a panel, and she said that she, on a good month, she made $26,000 in a month.
Whoa.
And I was like, what? Excuse me? People are making $26,000 a month to blog. And the more I began to read about entrepreneurship, it is one of the best ways for people to create wealth or start to really generate money, because your income potential is practically unlimited. It's based on your hustle. And I mean, even with my Fab Finance, just last week when I closed my books, I had made more in 1 week than I made in half a year working at my 9-to-5. And so, for people who are stuck in that cycle of living paycheck to paycheck, your 9-to-5 definitely can keep you in that. It can definitely pacify that. But when you break out of that and start to create solutions, there are people who are millionaires, are billionaires because they created, they became entrepreneurs. So while a job will keep you just over broke, I feel view entrepreneurship as a way for people to actually begin to create wealth. Not to say that you can't do it with a job, it just takes you longer and it requires diligence and wise handling of your money. But I've just seen too many entrepreneurs do exceptionally well. I was talking to one of my other friends, he made $46,000 last month as an entrepreneur. And he's not doing anything, you know, spectacular. I mean, he provides credit counseling services. So that's one of the reasons I'm a big supporter of entrepreneurship, because I just look at it as a way that people can actually earn what they're worth and start making real money. So I created a course, Financially Prepared to Be Your Own Boss, for anyone who is considering entrepreneurship, because as high as the rewards are, it's difficult. And a lot of people don't make it, and a lot of people don't understand, and I don't think there's enough invested in entrepreneurship education in our higher education system. So in this course, I teach people, you know, what to plan for, how to create your multiple revenue stream plan, because too many people are thinking that they're going to make a living off of just like one product. You have to have several ways to make money in order to be a stable and successful entrepreneur, especially if your idea isn't all the way fleshed out or you're not the leader in that particular industry. It's a great course. It's everything I wish I had when I was transitioning to working for myself.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's sounds inspiring, sounds interesting, and I'm sure that you've piqued the interest of a lot of our listeners. So, with that in mind, before we close out, could you please let us know the website, also your social media, and your contact information in case somebody wants to learn more, because I know I'm going to be on the website, probably getting myself signed up for that course. So let everybody else know how they can do the same.
Absolutely. So if you're interested in joining, I look forward to having you. You can find me at MyFab, that's F-A-B, F as in Frank, Fab, as in Fabulous, finance.com. You can put in my name, Tonya, T-O-N-Y-A, rapidly in the Google search, and MyFab Finance will come up, or anything related to MyFab Finance will come up. You can find me on all social media channels as MyFab Finance. And I spent a lot of time and energy in ensuring that the website was intuitive and so that it's easy to find things. So as long as you go to MyFabFinance.com, you're covered. If anyone has any questions, they can go to the Contact Us page on my website. Me and my team definitely make all attempts to respond to anything sent within 48 hours.
That's perfect. So everyone, please check out Tonya and her work on myfabfinance.com. And Tonya, I want to extend a special thank you to you for coming on the show today and letting everyone know that they can be successful financially. It just takes a little planning.
Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you. Take care.
And now it's time for A Woman's Touch. This is to give listeners tips on etiquette and men's fashion from an etiquette and manners expert. Since good manners and etiquette is timeless, these tips will definitely help you achieve the gentleman's code. So now, this is A Woman's Touch, only on The Life of a Gentleman.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Life of a Gentleman's podcast, joined once again by Sharon Schweitzer. She is an international protocol expert and the founder of Protocol and Etiquette Worldwide. She's based in Austin, Texas, and Sharon is also the best-selling author of the international award-winning book, Access to Asia. Sharon, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be back.
We had a great discussion last time when you came on and talked about Airbnb, and we got so much good information out of it. We are more than happy to have you join us again.
Well, thank you for the invitation to return. It's always a pleasure to be interviewed by the award-winning author of Life of a Gentleman and The Gentleman's Code.
I appreciate that. Now, Sharon, it's funny when we discussed what we were going to talk about this week. We're right in the middle of this political season, and everybody is talking about politics, and they're asking sometimes some very personal questions. So today we thought you could help us out with avoiding these political season discussions.
That sounds like a good topic. I know a lot of states are in the early voting period, and this is a hot topic.
Yeah, and it's one that can get us in a lot of hot water sometimes too. So we're looking forward to hearing how we can avoid some of those miscues. Now, let me ask you, what is the most important concept to remember when a political discussion pops up?
Well, one of the most important things that I know your listeners will want to know, Richard, is that anytime politics comes sneaking into the conversation, it's important to remember that respect is universally understood. So, no matter our cultural conditioning, we all have a culture that has a deep impact on us, and we understand and we recognize respect. So worldwide, whether we were born and raised in Michigan or Texas or the United States or maybe South America or Europe or another continent like Asia or Africa, we understand and we recognize respect. So when we're asked a political question in the U.S. or another culture, it's important to show respect for different questions, customs, and the reasoning behind why someone may be asking that question. So across the globe, the decorum of asking and answering political questions can vary greatly. You know, in Australia, that's an open culture where the open discussion about politics is welcome. So you really have to stop and consider who's asking the question and what their motives may be. A lot of times we think, oh my gosh, I'm so offended, I don't want to discuss politics. But maybe the person asking the question doesn't think of it as offensive in their culture. So we have to kind of stop and take a step back and think about the fact that maybe it's offensive in our culture, but not necessarily in everyone else's. So we have to kind of keep respect front and center.
Wow, I never really thought of it like that. And we're living in such a globally diverse time that we do run into people from different cultures. So it's good that you mentioned that. Now, if somebody's asking one of these questions, though, how can we exercise our right to remain silent and keep our views private? Because sometimes we don't want to share those views.
Exactly. And this happened to me. And one of the reasons why I wrote quite a bit about this, and I started writing about this in February, because my husband and I were on vacation and we were with a large group and we were doing some touring in Australia and New Zealand and we were doing some wine tasting and we were repeatedly questioned about what was happening with the U.S. in the political climate. And we were questioned so frequently during this trip that I decided to write down some strategies for how to handle that, especially when you do not want to, on vacation, talk about politics. So at that point, I wanted to be respectful, and I wanted to respect the other culture, and I knew they were very curious. But at the same time, I wanted to keep my views private. So I said, in the midst of such a contentious political season, I feel it's best to keep my opinion to myself. I really appreciate your interest, and I want to acknowledge and thank you for asking. But at this time, you know, I'm just not comfortable sharing my political views. Now, some folks wanted to continue to ask questions, but I acknowledge and I thank them for their genuine interest because I wanted to respect them as people from another culture. But I also wanted to defer a sticky political conversation because there were a lot of other people there in the wine tasting rooms with us. And I didn't know what other people's views were. Some of the other people that we were tasting wine with, I didn't know who they were. And I just felt like it was something that I was not comfortable sharing in front of everyone.
That makes a lot of sense. And like you said, with a lot of people around and a lot of eyes and ears on us, it puts you in an uncomfortable position. But sometimes there's those people in the room, or maybe someone that you know on a secular level, and they're very persistent and they keep questioning you. How can you respond with grace or graciously when you're faced with somebody who is a persistent questioner?
And that's exactly what happened, Richard, is they kept asking, almost like an Energizer bunny. They just kept coming back and coming back and saying, well, you know, my husband's really tall. And so my husband used to play basketball. And so they kept saying, well, sir, surely you have an opinion. And, you know, my husband said, well, you know, I just haven't made my mind up yet. You know, there are new socks coming out every day, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, we get A will come out today, B will come out tomorrow, and then in 3 days, we're going to find out that Z happened. And so I think there's going to be a lot more developments that happen over the next several weeks. I'm just waiting to see when all the cards are out on the table. And so he continued to defer the questions, and I thought that was handled very well. And so I said the same thing. You know, I'm just going to wait and see how it all plays out. And then the other thing I would do is I would segue to another topic and say something like, oh, the vineyard is so beautiful, and these grapes are gorgeous, and your views are fantastic. Can you tell me about this gorgeous mural on the wall? You know, how did they paint this? And segue to another topic that's really of interest to the person who's asking the question. So, you know, congratulations on those Wolverines. They are doing so well in Michigan.
Yeah,
or,
they are.
Yeah, go Big Blue. You know, a great job closing that account. How did you do it? But, you know, segue to a topic that is going to be more interesting for them. And that way you can kind of segue and move away from the topic that you really don't want to talk to that the persistent questioner keeps asking you about.
That was a really nice way you and your husband handled that. And it still showed that you had a lot of class. You weren't blowing the people off, but you were politely changing the subject, which is nice. So I think all of us can take some pointers there. How could somebody who, they're open to the idea of discussing it, how could they engage in a respectful conversation if they did want to share their views this time of year?
Well, you know, political conversations, you know, they can be a conversation starter in social circles where they're, you know, taboo in the workplace. So you just have to know your audience before you engage. So when you do engage in these conversations, number one, I think it's important to show that research has shown that conversation, increased conversation, is associated with greater political action. So answering some questions respectfully can actually make you a cheerleader for democracy, which is wonderful. So expressing your beliefs in a way that's not destined for a political crawl, for example, is really helpful. And I think the best way to do that is to cite research and concrete reasons for why your views align a certain way. So if you've done some research and you have some specific statistics on immigration or economics or healthcare, and you have those research and that statistics and say, you know, this is why my views align this way, that's going to encourage more of an intellectual conversation as opposed to a war of opinions. So, you know, you want to express your beliefs, and then you need to be courteous and let the person who you're speaking with express their views, even if you disagree. So you have to put your listening ears on and, you know, take time and listen and be an active listener, not just someone who's waiting to talk.
Yeah, that's always a good point to remember. The thing about this is, like you said, sometimes you can get into these discussions, but here's the flip side of it. Sometimes, even if we don't want it to happen, the political discussion can become heated. How can you then reconcile conflicting beliefs? Is there a way we can do that?
You're right, Richard. You know, and your listeners know just as well as you and I do that it's inevitable that these disagreements are going to arise. So the key is to try as hard as we can to handle them with grace and dignity and some of that respect we talked about earlier. And it's really tough. I think sometimes we just have to count to 10 and really try to maintain that dignity. And the way I've handled it is to say, that's an interesting way to look at this. You really do bring up some good points. However, my position is, and then set your position out. And just avoid raising your voice, showing anger, you know, throwing an adult temper tantrum, or just abruptly walking away, because then it makes it really personal. The other thing I think you can do is have some really good conversation closers. And these I call my toolkit, where I have some phrases that I can use that are going to let me close this conversation gracefully and slip away so I can maybe go for a jog and take my, you know, my aggression out that way.
Yeah, that's
so
a good one.
So I might say, I might say something like, you know, thank you for your insight. I appreciate your viewpoint, and it'll be interesting to see how things go in 2017. Have a good afternoon, and then turn and step away. Or you could say something like, you know, you bring up a perspective I really haven't thought about. I've enjoyed visiting with you. Goodbye. And say something gracious and close the conversation and step away. That way, you don't have to continue to engage in the conversation. You don't necessarily acknowledge that they're right or that they're wrong, but you don't continue to engage in a way that's going to escalate things. But you close the conversation with grace, and then you step away.
No, that's a perfect way to do it. It's simple, but effective. I like that. We've had this great discussion, and so we realize now there's really a choice we have to make. If we're going to keep our views to ourselves, or if you will engage in a discussion. So to kind of sum things up, how do we handle ourselves either way? Some final thoughts.
Well, Richard, I think that your listeners will want to know that whether they decide to respond or not and engage in political conversation, you know, being tactful and polite and remembering that educated responses help us decide and help us cordially engage and graciously decline whenever these inevitable conversations cross our paths. You know, an example of handling ourselves would be to say, you know, I'm basing my political decision at this point in time based on research results from Bloomberg or Harvard Business Review or whatever resource you look at that shows ABC. I think you really need to take time and self-assess your comfort level and be authentic to yourself. Do you really want to engage in conversation or not? Make a decision and then stick to your decision. You know, your spouse may want to engage and you may not, but find a balance that makes you comfortable and then stay that course. Or as they say down here in Texas, don't change horses midstream.
All right.
So if you decide you don't want to talk politics, then just stay with that and be comfortable. But either way, make a self-assessment, and I encourage everyone to vote.
Hey, thanks for the advice again, Sharon. And before you go, could you share your social media for us so that we can keep in touch?
I'd be happy to. Your listeners can find me on the web at SharonSchweitzer.com, which is SharonSchweitzer.com, just like Albert Schweitzer. And my book is on Amazon.com. And I am on Instagram at Sharon Schweitzer. And I'm on Twitter at Austin Protocol.
Okay, wonderful. And that book, the title is Access to Asia, and it talks about U.S. and world culture. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it sure does, Richard. Thank you for having me as a guest on your show.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we look forward to next time when we have some more Modern Manner tips from you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, gentlemen, that wraps up another edition of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. This week, we had another great episode. At the beginning, Dennis and I had a great discussion all about hair loss. We know sometimes that can be a touchy subject for men because you feel embarrassed or ashamed that you're having problems losing your hair. But gentlemen, have no fear. If you take care of yourself, look presentable, and even try a low haircut or a bald haircut style, you're going to see that you still can walk out of the house every day with a lot of confidence and look absolutely great. Next, I'd like to send a special thank you to our guest who joined us on the line. Tanya Rapley from MyFabFinance.com, and also Sharon Schweitzer. We appreciate them coming on and giving us some great information all about our personal finances and also how to avoid political season discussions. We know there's a lot of people talking about political things these days, but we want to keep our comments to ourselves and remain neutral and be a gentleman. Last but not least, I'd like to send a special thank you to our producer. She does a wonderful job of taking care of everything behind the scenes. So hats off to you, Deandra. And also to Chuck, we look forward to having you come on again very soon. Charles, as I said, is very busy taking care of some secular work, but he will be back with us shortly. Before you go, also, if you're interested in the Harrison Blake Apparel monthly subscription, here's a coupon code for you. Use the coupon code FAST5 for $5 off your first monthly box. Thank you for listening, and as always, please keep the reviews coming on iTunes. It's really helping us, and we look forward to bringing you more information in the near future. Until next time, everyone, take care.
These messages are brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel, specializing in fashion accessories such as ties and lapel pins. Join the Harrison Blake Monthly Subscription Club. Each month, they deliver one necktie plus four additional matching accessories for only $25. This is the easy way to build or enhance your wardrobe. To learn more and subscribe, visit HarrisonBlakeApparel.com. These messages are also brought to you by Deandra Marie, a young, talented female host who conducts interviews, event coverage, and produces the Life of a Gentleman podcast. For inquiries on how to be featured, please visit www.itsdeandramarie.com.